Welcome to episode 50 of the Critical Moves podcast. Episode 50, I'm just over the moon that we've made it this far. I'm Al, I'll be your host, and I'm joined by Jack.
Hey, everybody.
And making a surprise rare appearance, it's my best pal, don't tell Tim I said that, it's my best pal Nuno.
Hello.
Welcome home.
Finally, you guys invited me again.
Well, you know, we thought maybe it was time for us to let you have some of the limelight that you so desperately crave. So here you are. Are you good?
I am. Thank you so much. How have you guys been doing lately? Has your star been shining brighter ever since I went away for a couple of months?
We've managed, haven't we, Jack?
Yeah, mine's certainly brighter. I'm the fan favorite now.
Did you not know that, Nuno? You've been replaced.
No one is insulting me. I shouldn't say. Yes, I totally know that. I've been reading the comments.
Anything interesting happened in the last couple of weeks, Nuno?
A lot of stuff happened in the last couple of weeks. But I was under the impression that we're going to talk about what happened in RTS this year so far. I think so.
Yeah, but I want to know, has anything lovely happened with you in the last couple of weeks?
Oh, I don't know. It's just like this small ring on my finger, maybe. Something like that. Ah.
So for all of our female watchers or listeners, we're very sorry to say that Nuno is now off the market. But I'm still free. So,
Adam, now me. What's left?
I know. Everyone's getting married off. But yes, you're right. We're going to talk today about where we are at the moment with RTS games. But I thought before we would start, Nuno being the oracle of, or the font of all knowledge of strategy gaming with his website, strategyandwargaming.com, he could maybe give us a rundown of what we can expect for the next quarter, for the end of the year. Is there anything new in the pipeline that looks interesting that we should be aware of?
There was. There was a lot of stuff interesting coming out in 2025, but if you're talking exclusively RTS, I don't think so. Like, no, yeah, but there's a lot of stuff coming out in 2026. Dawn of War, Sanctuary, Shattered Sun, maybe. I don't know. You let us know. And Empire Eternal, again. But don't you want to talk about the games that came out in 2025 first? Like, there's a lot of them. Like, actually, surprising amount of them. Have you guys played any new RTSs this year that you enjoyed?
I can't actually say that I've played a new RTS this year. Not that I can think of.
You haven't played anything new? Oh, you've not tried Tempest Rising yet, have you?
No. I've played, I recently picked up Endless Legend 2, but that's turn-based, of course.
Yeah, okay. So yes, you're right, Nuno. There's been, I think it's been a stellar year for RTS, certainly in terms of the number of releases, if not necessarily the quality of the releases. Is that fair to say?
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure, because you have two major releases. Like, you had Tempest Rising and Broken Arrow, or maybe it was the other way around. I don't know, chronologically.
It was the other way around.
Yeah, so Tempest... Okay. And those were probably the two highest profile releases of the year. Quite possibly two of the highest profile releases of the year for all of strategy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say those were successes. I think I know Broken Arrow was a success because Slytherin has been talking about that. How good it did, despite the fact that it's still having its troubles with the multiplayer community, a lot of cheaters and a lot of problems pertaining to the multiplayer side of things, but single player, I think people enjoyed it. Tempest Rising, I don't know. Do you guys have any information about how Tempest Rising did? Did it do well? Is there something about it going on online? Because I
think it did well, and they've recently put out an update of what to expect coming up. They're making some more maps available, some custom match settings, and all the kind of very generic stuff. But the fact that they're still working on it, they're still creating content for it, would give an indication that it was actually doing really, really well. But I think what we're waiting for, people who play Tempest Rising, and when I look at the Reddit, the RTS subreddit, the third faction, now when we interviewed Brandon Castile, God knows what episode that was, it was a long time ago, and he talked about the Vetti as the third faction, and it was almost like a promissory note that we would see this third faction at some point, and it hasn't been released yet. So I guess they're building up to a DLC for Tempest Rising where the third faction will come on. And I mean, is the fact that they're working on a DLC an indicator of it doing well, or is it an indicator that it's not doing well?
I have to say, I played the game, played like the first 7 or 8 missions of the campaign, I think. I didn't enjoy it a lot. Not sure why. I was like, maybe I don't enjoy RTS games anymore. You know, you always have that nagging feeling. Maybe I'm getting too old for this. But then I played Warhammer, Dawn of War Definitive Edition. I was, nah. I just didn't like Tempest Rising at all. And I'm not sure why. But the game is okay. Like, the game plays well. It has very beautiful graphics. The campaign is interesting, but I was just expecting something more Red Alert-ish. So a bit, something a bit more wild when it comes to story, when it comes to units. And all the units were very uninspired, very boring units. So the only interesting unit it had was the drone operator. Other than that, I don't recall anything about the game. And I played it like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I think that the drone operators are a bit of a touchy subject, really, because there's a lot of cheese going on with drone operators where you can load them into the sky crane helicopter with an engineer, and the drone operators blitz everything, and the engineer keeps the helicopter alive. So they are a cheesy unit, but when you say they're uninspired, I think that they've tried to bring in the Command & Conquer vibes that we remember from the games from the 90s. And as soon as I played it, I was like, this, it felt like what I remember Command & Conquer felt like. But they've tried to keep the units reasonably grounded in terms of they've gone for this slightly future, you know, slightly futuristic stroke modern military approach with the units. And I think that was a design decision. You know, they didn't want to ape Red Alert and Red Alert 2 and have people firing bears at people, or, you know,
I was expecting paratroopers bears.
Yeah. So, you know, or dolphins with lasers on their heads, or
where is my giant squid? Where's my giant squid?
Well, there's no navy, is there, in Tempest Rising?
Even better.
Yeah.
Walking giant squid.
A giant skid on roller skates. So,
like the Tempest Rising designer just taking notes right now. He's just scribbling stuff.
Yes, Brandon, if you're listening to this, you know,
good shit. This is the good shit. Keep going, guys.
Please credit us with the idea for the giant squid on roller skates. They've really lent into the original Command & Conquer, but I think it's more like the original Command & Conquer rather than Command & Conquer Red Alert, if that makes sense. It's the same sort of time setting, you know, slightly futuristic, but grounded in real-world military. And I think the game was really good, and I'm surprised that, Jack, you haven't played it, because I know that you did say last time we spoke on a subject that you were looking at it.
That's true, yeah. It's just, I usually am late to the party whenever a new game comes out. So whenever I don't hop on the train on the tracks while it's there, I'll miss out a little bit, and I'll come back and I'll play Tempest Rising later. I missed the initial release window for that, and there's just too many other things for me to play that I happen to catch now.
And then you've been involved in the background with Broken Arrow, haven't you?
I just did some content for them, some marketing stuff. But yeah. I don't have any information about the game development and the game state. And even if I did, I wouldn't share it, of course. But I can talk from experience that I really enjoyed Broken Arrow. Because I'm a single player guy, so the multiplayer aspect of it is never a problem for me. So that, but I can get why people get upset as to all those problems with balancing issues and cheaters and quitters at the middle of the match. Something mm-hmm. like that. That can get annoying. As someone who plays League of Legends, that can get pretty annoying. But from a single player standpoint, I think the campaign is really good. Like the graphics in the game are amazing. The sound design is great. Like the branching campaign is really cool. It teaches you how to play the game very well because it's challenging. So it's not an easy campaign. It's not a campaign that you just can order units around, go here, go there, and just like it plays for you. No, it's a challenging campaign. I think it forces you to learn the mechanics of the game, to get really deep into the mechanics of the game. It's a very complex strategy game with a lot of small moving parts. That sometimes it's really hard to keep track of what's going on. But if you enjoy a more complex RTS, I think you're going to enjoy Broken Arrow. But just keep in mind that at the moment, things in the multiplayer are complicated, right? They're always launching new updates to prevent cheaters and to try and combat people who are always leaving the game.
Well, things in the single player aren't perfect either, are they, in terms of community complaints? Because you can't save during a mission.
Oh, yeah, that's... I would say that was never an issue for me because I very rarely live in the middle of the game because I tend to play when I manage to have a long session of gaming, mm-hmm. so... Never happened, but yeah, I heard of people complaining that if it was like a 30-minute mission, it can be quite frustrating to have to redo the whole thing over and over again. Because yeah. you might lose on the final push. And it sometimes the game can come off as a bit unfair. Like, I'm not sure if you guys have this same experience of playing some strategy games that you're planning your whole mission. And you think, oh, like this is the final objective, and then the game pulls the rug under you and says, haha, no, there's another objective, and now you need to take like the 10% of the forces you have now and reach this final objective, which is way harder than the one you were already doing. And you're like, oh, fuck, I need to redo the whole thing. Like Broken Arrow also does that in some missions and can keep showing new objectives at you. And I can see where people's frustration coming from. I'm not sure why they haven't developed the save feature for the game. That's a weird one.
I'll tell you the reason why. And it's a complaint that we've seen forever in not just RTS games, but in many games where there's a multiplayer component. It's because you have, and we've talked about this on past episodes, you have a vocal minority of toxic multiplayer players, and then you have a silent majority of single players. I'm a single player gamer, you're a single player gamer, so we will play a game and enjoy the campaign, or you know, maybe a few skirmish matches or whatever. We say, yeah, that was great. We enjoyed it. We're not the type who go onto Discord servers and shout and swear and complain and throw loads of toxic bile at developers because the multiplayer isn't perfectly balanced. So they haven't fixed it because the people who are doing the shouting are the small minority who are complaining about cheaters in multiplayer rather than the majority of their audience, which is single players.
I think that's a big factor of it. It's always the same, right? And if people, but then again, I'm not sure if that's a fair thing to say, because Broken Arrow was also developed having multiplayer in mind, and they knew the kind of audience they were going after. Like mm-hmm. they were clearly going after the war game audience, the fusion systems like audience, so they knew what it was like, and they kind of missed the mark on some of this stuff, like the whole thing where you like your anti-cheat not working properly, like it. I think that can kill a game outright. The lack of penalty for leavers also was extremely problematic. I think they implemented one a couple of weeks ago, maybe this week, I don't know. So some weird design decisions there, but they're working to fixing it at least. And the game is has a very healthy number of people playing it as well. I think the game it sold extremely well, really well for an RTS title, especially for the new franchise. Like if you're talking about Illusion Systems games, like they have a massive backlog of games of the War Game Red Dragon, War Game Erwin Battle, and then you. They also have the Steel Division stuff as well. So they have some brand recognition behind them. But Broken Arrow was a new IP. And for the new IP, I think it did extremely well.
Yeah, and I think it's really nice to see new IPs breaking out and getting some recognition, you know, and not just games like, and I don't want to talk bad about Tempest Rising because I really enjoyed the game, not just games which are essentially love letters to the past. You know, and I appreciate there's comparisons drawn with Warno and World in Conflict when it comes to Broken Arrow, but it is its own entity, isn't it?
Yeah. It's its own game. It's a very different game than. It's easy to compare it to War in Conflict because the theme, it's thematically very similar. I have West versus East, Cold War gone hot type of scenario, even if Broken Arrow is supposedly near future. But they're very similar. Aesthetically, they also look very similarly, but they're very different beasts of a game. Like, Broken Arrow is a lot more in-depth than anything. War in Conflict, even Warno, it's a lot more complicated than any of those games, and it's its own thing. But from... I think it was a positive. Like, I reviewed the game, I think I gave it an 8 out of 10. Maybe, because I really enjoyed the single-player aspect of the game. I think it's very well made, it's well designed. Like the amount of units the game has, it's really cool. There's a lot of small details to the units that you need to take into account when you're fighting. Like, it can be a bit overwhelming sometimes, because it's just way too many numbers you're trying to crunch at once. And if you have 12, 15 units all at once on the screen, it can get a bit overwhelming, especially if you are completely unaware of what each unit is supposed to do. I think the game, it's not an easy game to get into it, but if you enjoy military stuff, I think you're gonna find something to relate to and something to pick up on and start learning from there. I really enjoyed the game. That's all I want to say about it. I think it was a success for the company. I think it was a major hit for the RTS scene because the RTS scene is needing some hits, because like there are some games coming, but seems like they just keep getting pushed into 2026, right?
Okay, let's move on to another quite surprising release, which was the Dawn of War Definitive Edition. And I know, Nuno, you never played the original Dawn of War, did you?
I had not.
Did you play the original Dawn of War, Jack?
No, I have not.
Have you played the original Dawn of War at all?
Yes. Like, far, far too much. Not too much, because I loved it. Absolutely loved it, yeah. But when I saw your review on Strategy and Wargaming, where you talked about the Definitive Edition, you said you never played the original, I was actually quite stunned, because for me, I think it was 2004 it came out, and it was a standout RTS from the early mid-2000s. I was quite blown away that you had never actually played it before.
The reason why I haven't played it before was because I wasn't aware of what the franchising was, like the old Warhammer thing. I had no idea. Heck, I think I didn't know what Warhammer was until like 10 years ago, something like that. So, as a kid, when the game came out, and I remember seeing it on the shelves, actually. It's a very weird, like very distinct memory I have. Because I would always go to the same store and look at the strategy games that were there. And I thought that the 40k number on it was the amount of units you could build. It's just like, it's something like you as a kid, like this for some reason that makes sense in your head. And I was like, my PC can't handle this. This is too much stuff. So I won't buy it. And I just probably went and bought another shitty game instead of playing Dawn of War.
I mean, it makes sense. I can see where your childish logic kind of took place there, yeah.
Can my PC actually run with 40k people? Because it's struggling with 200 in Age of Empires, so I'm pretty sure it won't. This was my childish logic, yes. But it surprised me to how well it held up, the game held up, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't touched a single thing when it comes to the gameplay of it. They just upgraded the graphics, like did some retexturing work, did some shadowing stuff, added modern controls, like finally someone that lets you control their cameras with WASD.
You can change it? You can change, because I've played through the Definitive Edition campaign twice since it came out.
Wait, am I dreaming? Can you not change it?
And I was like, I was hoping for WASD controls, and I was like, oh, it's not working. I had to use the cursor keys still.
I'm going to put the game right now and let's see.
But it's interesting because in episode 44, Joe and I sat down and we talked about Dawn of War 4, which was announced not long after the Definitive Edition came out. Jack, I know you've not played the original, but you're aware of the series, you're aware of the game, and you're aware of Dawn of War 4 that's been released. What do you think of the way that they've done that? Because I was actually, when they released the Definitive Edition, I was like, this is what everything's been building up to. And then when Dawn of War 4 was announced soon afterwards, I was quite taken aback.
Unfortunately, I'm not that familiar with the most recent release compared to the acclaim of this successor now. But I mean, I'm hearing so much positive feedback around this, and I think all of my friends are on board with this. I'm seeing them play it as well. So it's, I mean, my friends like strategy games, but it was the same thing about bringing up Broken Arrow. I mean, they just were magnetized to those games, and they've stuck there. So it's clearly succeeding as far as marketing goes, and it's clearly establishing a fan base. I don't think they've ever played a Dawn of War game before.
And I think that, as Nuno says, it still holds up 21 years later after release. And it shows that there's still a market for these, what are essentially older games. You know, this was released 20 years ago, and now you have this next generation playing this game from 2004, albeit in its updated state. But it just shows, doesn't it, that there is actually a market for that.
I think there always has been a market for RTS games. It's just, we had this discussion before, right? They just don't make as much money as other genres. Like gaming is an industry of cycles. Like sometimes, like the shooter is the fashion of the day. Sometimes, like it's the Dark Souls, and the other time is the roguelike. And then you have like the MOBAs were there for a while, and then you can go on and on and on and on. And RTS had their time, their prime time in the late 90s and early 2000s. I think from an industry perspective, it makes sense that you put your money on other titles, I guess. If I was managing a company, I'd be like, yeah, probably going to build like the next Battlefield or the next Call of Duty makes more money than RTS. But there's a clear niche. No, I wouldn't say a niche, like a massive audience there that is just craving RTS or strategy as a whole. I think strategy as a whole, like since 2012, maybe, was it when XCOM came out, like the remake, 2011, I don't remember. I think we have seen like a steady increase of new games being released every year, and hasn't stopped since. Like in 2026, it's not going to be different, right?
But even though, you're right, they don't make as much money, but they also cost a lot. There's a lot that goes into developing them as well, you know, because of the fact that you have so many different units on the screen and they all have different mechanics and they all work in different ways. And you have Navy, air, land units, bases. There's so much involved in the development of them that they probably cost a lot more to develop than something you can knock out quite simply and cheaply and make more money from. So, and I think that this is, As a dedicated RTS player, I love RTS games. That's really what got me into strategy gaming. It really suits me that it is that way, because you know that the people that are making these games, they're not making them because they think this is the surefire way to make money. They're making them because they want to make that kind of game. And I like to think that comes across in the game presentation and in the gameplay. And when you look at Tempest Rising, when you look at the Definitive Edition, you know, when you look at the trailers for Dawn of War 4, which we will speak about in a little bit, it's clear that there's passion involved in the development of those games, and I think that comes across. And as an RTS gamer, I think that we are really lucky to have passionate developers.
Hopefully. So, about Dawn of War 4, I'm not sure what to think of it. Like, I'm excited that the game exists. But I don't know. I'm just like this. You know, when you have that nagging feeling on the back of your head, it's like, man, maybe this is not going to be all that great. I don't know. I just have that. I have no reasons to... I can't give you an example as to why that happens or why do I have that nagging feeling on the back of my head. But just the way I saw people react to the way I saw like some YouTubers, Warhammer YouTubers reacting to the way gaming influencers, I guess you could say that, were showing the game, like the hardcore Warhammer guys would not... happy with what was shown.
Yeah, and I think the reason is because there's two things here. There's two reasons why it's I guess the reception has been, there's been an element of lukewarm to the reception. And the first one is the weight of expectation. People have been, the Dawn of War gamers and the Dawn of War community, the Warhammer 40k community have been waiting for Dawn of War 4 for so long that there's a significant weight of expectation. And with that comes a nervousness because you desperately, desperately want it to be absolutely fantastic. The next thing is, now King Art were developing it. They made Iron Harvest. King Art have said, they've looked at Dawn of War 1, 2, and 3, and they've said, we want to base this on what we were expecting from Dawn of War 1. Because and the right to do that, because that was easily the most popular of the three. That at least they're aiming at the right thing. But when people have seen the footage, they're saying it looks like Dawn of War 3 in terms of the art style, in terms of the unit style. It's like, well, yeah, but it's going to, because that's the most modern version of Dawn of War, is Dawn of War 3. So it's going to look more like Dawn of War 3 than it is like Dawn of War 1, because that's just, you know, the movement of technology, you know? So I guess that was always going to happen. But I think... okay, three reasons. The third one is King Art Games themselves. Because why are Relic not developing it? I know that Relic haven't had a great track record recently with Company of Heroes.
Everything.
Three, you know. I was over the moon when they released the Definitive Edition. And it's easily been their biggest success recently. And they were really cool in the way they did it, where if you own the original version, you got 30% off and all these kind of things. It was fantastic. But Dawn of War 4, King Art Games don't have an RTS pedigree. So Relic were bypassed. Games Workshop looked at the Kickstarter for Iron Harvest and said, we like what these guys have done. They offered it to Iron Harvest. They offered it to King Art Games, who went to Deep Silver and said, would you like to publish this game? And they said, yeah, and that's how it came about. But they're almost like an unknown quantity. So for dedicated fans, you're handing King Art Games the keys to the castle when they have no experience of running that castle. So I can understand the trepidation, but I'm beyond excited for it.
But King Heart built Iron Harvest, right? Iron Harvest was successful. It one of the most successful RTSs of the last decade, I think. Like it did extremely well for them.
It was very similar to Company of Heroes in terms of the cover system and the way it worked. So, you know, it wasn't in any way, shape, or form a bad game. But it's difficult for me to be able to explain it, I guess. But you're giving what some people consider to be the holy grail of IPs. Like Warhammer fans are very beardy, very salty, very gatekeeperish, and, you know, very insular, I guess. And they have this sense of ownership of the IP. You know, they love Dawn of War. They want Dawn of War to be successful. And you've handed it to somebody that you don't trust. Because I've only made one RTS, which was Iron Harvest, which, yeah, it was a decent game. But where's their pedigree? And they haven't got any. So they're an unknown quantity. But for those of you who, and you know, because I know that you don't listen to the episodes because you're far too busy, but we discussed Dawn of War 4. Joe and I sat down and discussed Dawn of War 4 in episode 44. It's on the screen if you watch this on YouTube in the top right corner. So go and give that one a listen. But before we look at what else we can expect from the 2025 and maybe into 2026, Stormgate.
Oh boy.
So, and I don't want to draw comparisons between Stormgate and Tempest Rising. I want to get both of your opinions on this, because Tempest Rising was, I guess, lent really into Command & Conquer, and Stormgate really lent into StarCraft. And Tempest Rising has been successful, and Stormgate fell on its ass, didn't it?
Now, Stormgate, from my knowledge of Tempest Rising, Stormgate's a game I'm not that familiar with, but I mean, just looking at it here, Stormgate has a mostly negative across Steam, mostly for, I mean, it just looks like community vented issues on microtransactions and corporate greed.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is it Frost Giant who developed Stormgate?
Yeah.
And they have, do they have developers as part of their team who were involved with StarCraft originally?
No. I think I also saw or read somewhere about that. But I think Stormgate, it's just a very uninspired game. I have to disclose something. So I only played Stormgate in the demo, like one of the early demos they released. I was like, oh yeah, this is shit. I'm not gonna touch this again. Sorry, guys. It is what it is. So I was like, nah, this isn't gonna happen. Like, this is just like a poor man's version of StarCraft 2, and StarCraft 2 is free. So there's no reason for me to be playing this. And then I started seeing the news, like the game was coming out, and the game was gonna be free. You know that once a strategy game goes free to play, you know, there's some shady shit going on. Like, you know that there's gonna be microtransactions, like the campaigns are gonna be behind the paywall. So all that good stuff that gamers really enjoy and hope to have in their games, like paywalled content and all that. So you know that's gonna happen. And I was like, nah, I'm not gonna dedicate my time to this shit. And so I just forgot about Stormgate. But I don't think I was the only one, because the game was dead on arrival, from what I gather. Like, the game never caught any kind of steam. Like, Broken Arrow had its issues when it came out. It still has, but there's already a dedicated community here. Tempest Rising, like, it's a single-player focused game, came out, apparently did well. Warhammer, Dawn of War, never had any issues when it comes to its community, because the game has been very much alive for the last 2 decades as well. And Stormgate just came and went like a fart in the wind. So, like, nobody remembers it.
see, for me, I never really gelled with StarCraft, because I fell into the Command & Conquer camp. That was always my bag. I always thought that StarCraft was a bit too quick for me. I like to be able to take my time, and everything I read about StarCraft was that it was all micro and meta and all the kind of stuff that I don't enjoy about gaming. So I wasn't really interested in trying Stormgate. And it would appear that was the right call, even though I didn't make it for the right reasons. It was the right call because Jack just said that it's mostly negative. And it's a real shame when that happens to a strategy game, to an RTS game in particular, because I think there's I don't know, we've had a couple this year, but I think they are so few and far between. It was just a bit of a shame to see it fail like it did.
From what I'm reading on Steam, like, most of the complaints are about backers that supported the title, and they're saying that they have to pay extra for the campaign, so that's kind of shitty, I guess. Not sure what were the conditions to back the game. I have no idea about that, so cannot give my opinion on it. But from what I played about it, and I played maybe half an hour, something like that, I just wasn't impressed. It was a very uninspired, very boring, just very cookie cutter RTS that looked like it was made by an indie developer in itch.io. So I was not surprised at all when it came out and flopped. And in fact, yes, it is a shame, because we're sorely missing, like, our StarCraft 3. It seems like it's never coming out. So yeah, it's very sad to see it happen like that. But hey, such is the way of things.
I mean, there's a lot of appeal, right, for in the modern age, a live service strategy game, especially an RTS game. I mean, that seems so serviceable. We We see Grand Strategy exist as live service now, so why shouldn't RTS games exist as live service? And we've talked about the game that shall not be named many times here on the podcast.
Wait, which game was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, Tim's game, you know?
Wow.
So I just feel like for all intents and purposes, a live service RTS would be exciting, but it seems like when it comes down to like the industry aspect of it, they mishandled a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign. They haven't supported the people that supported them along the way. And when you are comparing it to a release like Tempest Rising, it really seems like the developers behind Tempest Rising, and we spoke to them on the podcast early on, was the full intention to build a minimum viable product. They had a goal to like build a game that they could actually ship and create a community around their new intellectual property. And Stormgate, I'm not sure what their interests are, because it seems like we're all a little uninitiated to the problems between the crowdfunding to release, but it's disappointing for sure.
I'd be interested to anybody who's listening to this who knows much about Stormgate, come to our Discord and tell us what you think. Tell us what you know, because Nuno's right. It's very strange to see when something goes free to play, you know that there's something off there. There's a rabbit away. It's either because it's terrible or it's because it's terrible, I guess, you know, because why else would you make something free to play, especially if you have the potential to capture the StarCraft community by building a game being built by StarCraft developers aimed at the StarCraft community, for it to fail so much. Interesting to understand the reasons why when you compare it to Tempest Rising, which was built to look like Command & Conquer and capture the Command & Conquer community and worked. But on that subject of Command & Conquer-esque games, have either of you seen Dying Breed?
I thought it looked good. It's not my aesthetic, but I'm not necessarily turned off of retro things. I reviewed He Is Coming on the channel. It's not necessarily a major turnoff, but it's very clearly inspired by games that existed when Al was a grown man. It's leaning into that aesthetic to service its gameplay, and I think that's really interesting, especially because we're having a conversation about RTS and the lack of attention that they can receive compared to things like Grand Strategy or even turn-based games today. We're talking about the dismissal of previous franchises and new IPs coming out. It's nice that we're at a time that indie developers can find publishers like Hooded Horse, that we've talked about a lot here on the podcast, and release games that are not only RTS games in a genre that we were just saying seems a little neglected, but they're also releasing things that are inspired and aesthetically niche. So what are both of your opinions?
I've spoken to the developer of Dying Breed off and on for maybe the last couple of years. Like even before we started the podcast, I was talking to Ignacio about Dying Breed, because it was just something which, as an old school, as you say, I was a grown man when Command & Conquer came out. And it really does lead into that aesthetic, and it was really interesting. And there's a couple of demos available still, and I played them, and I was like, this is just what I remember. It reminded me of my childhood, and I think if you lead into someone's nostalgia, you're almost guaranteed success, I think. And I was so excited when the game got picked up by Microprose. I was so excited to see him get some success for this, because the amount of work and effort and blood, sweat, and tears that he's put into Dying Breed is just fantastic, and I really do wish him all the best. And I think it was released on the 7th of October, so on Tuesday of this week. Go and have a look, get on Steam, and go and buy that game, because support indie developers. Let's move on to what we can expect from the future then. We've covered Dawn of War 4, so let's leave that where it belongs. Jack, have you seen anything which you can expect in 2026 which really captures your eye, that you're interested in seeing?
2026, yes, but I did want to draw attention to something coming out here in 2025, which is, we were just talking, I was specifically talking about basically live service RTS games. And Age of Empires 2 is getting a new DLC this month. World's Edge is dropping a sequel in their Chronicles series of downloadable content packs across the three DLCs, one of which still on the way. The first one has extremely high praise, and the second one is kind of sitting at mostly negative, but people seem to be very excited for this more direct sequel to the first DLC. It's entirely based on Alexander the Great and seems to really be challenging the, I guess, for lack of a better term, the meta of Age of Empires 2 gameplay that's existed for the way that that whole game's entire gameplay loop is centered.
I covered the Age of Empires DLC on the Critical News episode, which is linked on the screen if you watch this on YouTube, alongside Dying Breed, alongside alongside Fractured Alliance as well. Have you seen Fractured Alliance?
No, I have not.
No, Nuno? You've normally got your finger on the pulse of new releases.
I have not Fractured Alliance. I never heard about it, but I'm looking at it right now. And... Mm-hmm. Wait, I'm juggling multiple screens, so let me see. Let me, my first experience. Let's get some real-time first impressions on this one. So,
I'm going to send this to Thomas as well. The
Who's Thomas?
The guy behind Tense Games, which is the developer that's making Fractured Alliance.
Looks great.
Be nice. Be nice if you like.
I mean, the game looks good. There's no video on it, right? Oh, is there? Oh, there's one. Oh, I covered this on Strategy and Wargaming a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, so back. You have seen it.
I have seen it. I just didn't remember about it. But now that I...
need to plug his website first.
Yeah, oh, of course. Of course, yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it?
I have to... guys, I have base bills to pay, okay?
Of course.
But yeah, I saw it and I covered it, so... What I said was, let's just wait and see, because very, very, very little thing is available, very little information on it. But the game, yeah, looks damn good for, it's just a one-person mm-hmm. team doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
So he released a game called Stellar Warfare, which is like a Homeworld-inspired RTS, which is, I think that was his first game, and... Again, solo dev, and it is really worth checking out. And Fractured Alliance, it's almost like that one, Tempest Rising, Dying Breed, they're all really speaking to the inner child in me, because they're all leaning into the Command & Conquer side of things. And are we maybe seeing that Command & Conquer is coming back into vogue? I mean, there was some interesting news a couple of weeks ago about EA being purchased, wasn't there?
I know, we should have bought stocks on EA. Now I regret it.
Maybe we'll see a Command & Conquer resurgence. Maybe we'll see... No, I won't say it, but I won't say it.
What are you going to say? Say it.
I was going to say, you know, it's being bought by, a Saudi Arabian conglomerate, and, you know, maybe we'll see the GLA come back into Command & Conquer Generals as a result, you know, but I'll...
some comments.
I'll be tempted to cut that, but EA's being bought out by a Saudi group, and I think that Trump's son-in-law or something has been involved in making it all happen or whatever. And it's there's a Command & Conquer link. I think they, of course, own the rights to Command & Conquer. It would be nice to see that they either offload the rights to Command & Conquer to somebody who's actually going to do something with the brand rather than just sitting on it. But maybe I really like Fractured Alliance, and I really like Tempest Rising, and I really like... I can't wait to play Dying Breed again. Maybe it's because those are the games that remind me of my childhood.
You're going to have a very happy 2026. Yeah. Because we still need to talk about Dorf. Have you guys heard about Dorf?
Yeah. I follow them on Patreon. Yep. And again, it's another almost CNC inspired, you know, aesthetically, isn't it, as well? You know, it's
aesthetically is very similar. It reminds me a lot of Red Alert, like on a glance, it's pretty much Red Alert. Like even the kind of like stop motion animations the units have. Looks. This is what I enjoyed about like Dorf, that I cannot I didn't have as much fun as Tempest Rising, which is the game looks very silly from the get-go. Right, you just you see the trailer of the game and you have like some kind of monster truck fighting like laser guns, and then you have like guys with Molotov cocktails, and then there's some weird mech thing going on, and this is all scrap, and then there's factories as well. So it's just a mess of stuff. But I just enjoy you like silly units in video games for some reason. Which is one of the reasons why I like Total War, Warhammer, is just because the units are a bit more sillier than they are with their historical counterparts. So
it's because you're a child.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'm underage and I've been groomed into critical moves.
Which isn't a bad thing, you know. I think we should all embrace having a child. But yeah, you're right about Dorf.
Yeah, but like if you spend your whole day like playing war games, you also need to enjoy, I hope so, enjoy the more fun aspect of the ridiculousness that these games can bring that you cannot have in more... I don't like the words, the expression serious games, but you know what I mean, right? Like, it's cool to see what people's imaginations and what designers can come up with and what kind of silly things they can build. Like, oh, like this is a cool, stupid tank that has four turrets in it. Like, yeah, like it's impractical. Like, you know that that thing, I mean, it exists technically, but you know what I'm saying. It's just fun to see what people come up with, and it brings a lot more character to the game. It makes it sound, feel, look a lot more unique. It gives it a very distinct play style as well, because if you can come up with a unit that's not just an average vehicle or an average human guy with a gun, I half of the way to creating something that's kind of special is already there. Like, which I think one of the reasons why games like Dawn of War, Command & Conquer Generals, Red Alert, are so beloved by their art style and by their unit, just because of this. Like, the game is immediately recognizable. Like, you know that specific thing belongs to that specific game. Like, and Generals is, like, the GLA are... They're completely different from the United States. The United States were completely different from China. Not sure if it's called China now. Maybe or if it was called China, if it was called something else. But you know, we know it's China.
So, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
It was.
So yeah, I think Dorf looks really cool, and I just love that. I'm not sure how they do that. Like, maybe it's drawn art. Like, do they draw it? It reminds me a lot like the backgrounds you had in the Commandos games. Do you recall those? And how, like, so well, so beautifully well crafted those background images were.
I think Dorf looks fantastic. I think the aesthetic appeals to me far more than a game like Dying Breed. Like I said, it's nothing against the retro aesthetic, but even in a way, Dorf kind of has that. It reminds me a lot of something inspired like Disco Elysium. Like, obviously not the same art style in itself, but it clearly there was an art department behind this that was inspired in a particular way. And like Nuno said, it's almost claymation-like. It reminds me a lot of early isometric CRPGs. I think it looks fantastic. I did want to ask, while we were here, closer to War Games, Nuno, they announced Sudden Strike 5 for 2026.
It looks like Sudden Strike 4. That's all I have to say about it. I'm not sure.
Isn't that what happens when you get to the 4s and the 5s and the 6s and the 7s? Look at Civilization. You know, is there much innovation that goes on in sequels?
No, Civilization, you get to the 7, and instead of like doing a great thing, you just make that piece of shit. Okay. Now, I think the Sudden Strike 5 looks exactly like Sudden Strike 4, which is weird, given that Sudden Strike 4 came out in 2018, 17, so... Kinda long time ago to not improve a lot on the looks of the game, but I didn't enjoy Sudden Strike 4 all that much. Like, it's a fun RTS, just to play around with. There's a lot of like a lot of missions, a lot of units, a lot of scenarios. Like, there's a lot of stuff in the game. Okay, the whole quantity over substance. So if you like to play around with a lot of different units, and if you like to play a lot of small missions, like the game is great for that. Very simple game. It's what I call a Saturday afternoon kind of game. Like, it's just something you boot up and just then just listen to something, and you're just playing the game to keep your hands entertained. Yeah, it's a weird description. I know, but it's just
no. That's just me being juvenile. I can think of other ways to keep your hands entertained, but you know that's so sorry. Just to lower the tone, look, we are approaching the end of our time together, gentlemen. Okay, so before we go, I'd just like to ask, without mentioning Dawn of War 4, what RTS are you most looking forward to, which is either coming in the next couple of months, as in 2025, or stretching into 2026, Nuno?
I want to highlight two. Dorf being number one, I already talked about that, and then Empire Eternal, which we haven't talked about it on the podcast, but Empire Eternal is essentially Empire Earth, but being published in, hopefully so, in 2026. So you have like it's a base building RTS where you take your civilization from the beginning of time until hopefully the near future, maybe until like 20,000 years in the future, something like that. Hopefully, I'm very excited for that because I really loved the original Empire Earth. I played hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of that game when I was a kid. And like for some reason, it's just one of those concepts just clicks with me. It's just stupid fun, and I hope Empire Eternal does that as well. And you guys, what do you guys are most excited for?
So I'm gonna make an interesting suggestion here. I'm gonna try to bend the rules a little bit on what Al asked, but I'm excited for a game that doesn't have an announced release date yet, but is a very interesting mesh of genres overall. It's a game I found on my own called Earthbreakers. It's actually a first-person shooter game. However, it's being made by Petroglyph, the creators of Star Wars Empire at War. And the concept of the game is that it's a first-person shooter multiplayer fighting game, you know, but it's mixing in RTS elements. So in the game, even though it's first-person shooter, you and three of your teammates have asymmetrical units that you choose out of a team. You build a base. You also can build numerous vehicles, and there's a strategic resource across the map that you're trying to compete to grab before the other team and use that to power and continue to upgrade your units. So you're basically playing an RTS like the ones I've mentioned before, like Halo Wars or literally something like Tempest Rising, but you're also going out and building those bases yourself and driving the vehicles yourself.
Sounds interesting. What's it called?
Earthbreakers. And it's being billed as an FPS RTS hybrid.
I will finish with an honorable mention to the game I'm most looking forward to, and I mean most across all of the available genres, which is of course Sanctuary Shattered Sun. This is the spiritual successor to Supreme Commander, and Supreme Commander is my all-time favorite RTS game. And having played, because I'm very fortunate to have played the alpha build of Sanctuary Shattered Sun, and I'm hoping somebody else on this podcast has played it as well recently. Having played it, I think it is it's an excellent title. The potential there is excellent. And having a good relationship with the developers of the game, I know that they are pouring everything that they can into making this game a success.
The game looks pretty damn impressive, to be fair.
So you've played it recently? You've played it eventually?
No, I played it when you got me the key to the game, but I just never got around to write something about it because am I under NDA?
No.
No? Okay. And I might eventually come and publish something about it, so. But yeah, what I played of the game, I really had a lot of fun with it. Really, really cool. Like, clearly, it was on its alpha stages, but it's shaping up to be something special, hopefully. And we're in dire need, again. Okay, as we're in dire need of StarCraft III, we're also in dire need of a new Supreme Commander game. And from what I've seen about it, like Sanctuary Shattered Sun is going to be that game. Sorry, Tim. Not beyond all reason. I'm sorry.
Oh, you've said the game that shouldn't be named. And on that note, we'll scratch it
from the podcast.
I will hopefully be able to give
make
you
my
some...
beep sound.
Yeah, maybe I will. I'll hopefully be able to give you some more news on the state of Sanctuary Shattered Sun in the next couple of weeks. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me this evening to talk about RTS games, my favourite subject. Nuno, it's good to have you back. You are now fighting with Jack to be the fan favourite.
I cannot win against Jack.
No, you can't, because he's just a gorgeous human being.
I'm losing currently.
No, you're not.
I was losing while you were gone, Nuno.
For those listening, please go to criticalmovespodcast.com. That's our main website, and you'll see a whole host of content on there with our beautiful faces as well, so you can see who it is who's been chatting this episode. Jack's going to sort me out a picture, so when you look at this, you'll be able to see him as well. criticalmovespodcast.com. You'll have all the links on there to our Discord, to our social media, to all the ways to get in touch. Come and join the Discord. Tell us if you like our episodes. Tell us if you think we're shit. Either's fine. I don't mind. We look forward to talking about strategy games with you. This has been Critical Moves. Thanks very much for listening. Take it easy. Goodbye.